Dinerek
doğması yoluyla.
Still doesn't feel natural.
Yeah.
I wish, you know, the rumor just attacked when a meeting started.
Okay.
Cool. So, you can start. It was your idea. So.
I should start? No, so I thought that we might speak a little bit about speech coding, because nobody's doing here speech coding, and I would like to have some maybe feedback, because except me, I'm supposed to do some speech coding stuff here with Hinek, but you know that a little bit at least, that it's based on some, let's say, Hilbert transforms using longer temporal context and deriving some parameters which would be transmitted to the decoder. So it's a little bit different than the stuff which people are using now, which is like RPC based. And but we are at the beginning with everything more or less. So still, we can't encode the speech, but of course there are many problems which we still didn't solve. And the biggest one is quite similar to RPC stuff, where people still don't know how to exactly encode the carrier or the source signal. You know what to do with the envelope, or how to approximate the envelope, let's say, when you have what?
Maybe, is the whiteboard working? Or not?
You mean that it would be nice to
maybe show us
yeah,
the general sort of outline?
Maybe
you
can
write
on
the paper.
Yeah, yeah,
okay.
You can do
it on
the
paper.
So what we are doing now, yeah?
Yeah.
You mean? Okay, everybody knows RPC stuff, how it works,
right,
so
yeah.
I don't have to present anything more else. But it's more or less very simple. We have, let's say, at the beginning there is some speech signal. What we are, we might see it in a very simple way, that we are using some Hilbert transform at the beginning to create analytic signal. The analytic signal is the signal which is a complex which you can create from the real some sequence, and if you apply a Hilbert transform on that on such a speech signal, like real trajectory, then you get a complex signal, and if you take just the amplitude, then you get Hilbert envelope called. So I don't know, yeah, let's say. Oops.
So is this different from the original PLP2 stuff then, is it?
Yeah, it's not PLP2.
Because that's what you started with, wasn't it?
Mm.
The stuff that Marius.
No, but Marius is. It's similar stuff, not Marius, it's actually
the same.
Hilbert transform.
Okay.
I know what you mean with the PLP. They were applying PLP with some iteration with this one approach. So
okay.
They were doing some smoothing of a spectrogram
in
two ways.
He's parameterizing it
right.
Both temporally and across
right.
the spectrum.
But PLP
yeah.
is using just the spectral direction, let's say you're doing for every 20 millisecond processing
yeah.
one feature vector.
Yeah.
You are processing one spectral band, frequency band.
Yeah,
right?
Okay.
So it's different direction.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is very simple. So applying that absolute operation, you get a Hilbert envelope. And of course there is the phase.
Yeah.
So it's
mm-hmm.
just a complex operation. And that's more or less all what we are doing. So now what we know is how to approximate that Hilbert envelope. We are applying that Hilbert, what is it, Marios stuff.
Yeah,
so he knows
yeah,
how
yeah,
to
yeah.
encode the Hilbert envelope.
Some kind of DCT or?
Like LSFs or RPC.
Mm-hmm.
You're applying again some linear operation model.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that.
But
it's
a different linear predictor.
Right,
it's a complex linear
it's
prediction.
It's a little bit different. It's not applied in the frequency domain. So instead of classical RPC domain where you have a spectrum, let's say,
no.
something like that, and you're applying some linear prediction model which is trying to approximate the spectrum, right? So
yeah.
This is frequency. In our case, we are trying to approximate kind of instantaneous energy.
Yeah.
So if this is a time, and you get one one frequency band, you can see something like this.
Yeah.
And we are trying to approximate that envelope, which is
yeah.
that Hilbert envelope.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So again, we know what to, more or less, we know what to do with Hilbert envelope. We know that we can apply their prediction model, and it works pretty well.
Okay.
But if you want to really well construct the speed signal, or the
you need the phase.
You need also the phase signal, which is in some sense quite simple for voice speed signal, let's say.
Because
but
you use linear phase, or
the phase? No, it's a phase, or you can even call it like a carrier. So the carrier is, if you know, amplitude modulation, right?
Yeah.
You might see something like there is really one cosine, which is very good.
Well, it depends on how this. I mean, you're talking, just the carrier. Okay,
yeah.
It's not necessarily phase, but if you're using some
it's
sort of
like
sinusoidal kind of
phase,
right? Phase.
Yeah. Exactly. So this is the signal which you also have to somehow encode or transmit from a coder to decoder in order to resynthesize it.
Well, so what sort of bit rate do you get for the encoding of the Hilbert transform, the spectrogram?
What do you mean? Again?
What sort of coding do you get so far for the
this one?
No.
The linear prediction one?
Yeah.
Well, it's just linear prediction, classical way. I mean, if you want to see it in more details.
No, but what sort of bit rate do you get? Is it? Do you have any sort of idea of what sort of bandwidth?
Oh, you mean?
Mean bit rate?
Yeah, bit rate, I mean.
Yeah.
Okay, sure. So. More or less, what we are using now is, let's say, something like 1.2 kilobits per second for that Hilbert envelope.
Okay, and that's with a fully optimized sort of compression scheme,
it's
or that's just the raw data? Or
it's again roughly estimated somewhere, we still know that we can go down.
Yeah, sure. You just cut out fewer bands and just use interpolation or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We are using
so
like 15 bands.
Okay, that's with the full spectrum basically being used.
Right, but they are integrated into 15 bands using a classical way like in MSCCs or MPOP. You just apply some those triangular windows
or something
like that in order to get just 15 bands, right? And each band is then processed independently.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So for one band, we more or less have like 100 bits.
Okay, that's quite good. So
Hilbert
envelope. And Inet was showing me how scalable it is in terms of you can take half the bands away and still get decent performance.
Right.
You take 3/4 of them away, it starts to degrade, but it's still intelligible, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's without doing any sort of prediction of what the missing bands might be, right? You just leave them out.
Right. That's what we did.
You could be able to do some sort of code book.
Yeah, sure.
Missing data
sure.
based on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are many things we didn't try at all, but yeah, exactly.
Okay.
But now what I'm really trying to do is somehow approximate that carrier signal to do something with the carrier. There are many simple things which you can do, like quantization, scalar quantization, for example.
It would be nice to have a scalable scheme, though, wouldn't it? Like, because you've got a nice scalable scheme for the decoding of the smooth spectrum.
Right.
It'd be nice to have some sort of scalable coding scheme for the voice signal as well, right?
You mean something like that kelp coding system where you are, or what is exactly a scalable system? What do you mean?
Well, different bit rates for the actual excitation as well.
Because
it'd be nice. Let's say if you had 1200 bits for the smooth spectrum and 1200 bits for the voice.
But I think this approach can do that because you really can split it into several.
Yeah, sure.
And you can decide how many bands you want, more or less.
I have a question. Is the scale linear or is mass scale, like in MSCC?
Yeah, this is a bar scale.
It's a bar scale,
or mass scale. So it's being more wider for high frequencies, and of course, the
overlapping is different, right?
Right, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But my sense is that it is not so much important still. I mean, it doesn't matter if you use mass scale or bar scale. But
no, just as long as it's some sort of
right.
Non-linear.
But that's what
we
are using.
Okay.
Actually, we are using just Gaussian windows here instead of those triangulars.
Okay.
Because they are more
smooth or
no, it's better than for decoding, it's better to play with them because they are not zero anywhere, you know.
Yeah.
They are approaching or in limit they are in zero, but actually they are not, so you don't have to care about some zero values here.
Okay.
But more or less it doesn't matter. We are using just Gaussian windows.
Okay.
So after you're doing LSF, so like, I mean, how you're finally
okay, so
encoding
those that Hilbert envelope is approximated by linear projection. So you have RPC coefficients which you can transcribe into LSF.
And then vector quantize.
Right,
whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So first you apply these triangular filters and then do LPC coding, or
right, exactly. So first the approach is quite simple. So at the beginning we apply DCT in order to get to frequency domain.
Yeah.
Then you apply those triangular or Gaussian windows.
Yeah.
So this is done for 1 second, 8,000 samples for 8 kilohertz sampling frequency, right? So for such DCT trajectory, you apply those Gaussian windows. And then, so you split into frequency subbands, and then each one frequency subband is more or less
again, you do the LP analysis on each
right,
subband. Yeah.
Right, exactly. You just apply LP, so autocorrelation, let's say, or you can do power spectrum, whatever.
Yeah,
so you, for each one, you get LSFs here.
Yeah. So how many LSFs you're using?
Well, I'm using now like 20 LSFs per 1 second. Per one frequency band.
So
but you...
15.
How many bands you
use? 20 times 15, isn't it?
You're not skipping any bands?
No, if I just skip...
15 into 20 then...
So 20 LSFs, each one is is quantized by 4 or 5 bits.
Okay. So it's 300.
Of what? 300 bits?
I mean, it's total of 300 sort of parameters per second.
True. Yeah.
But phase, you're not
right,
encoding
exactly
anything. Phase, you're directly transmitting.
You mean this by the Hilbert curve, or?
Yeah. The
no, of course.
Phase
of
Hilbert.
You're not currently transmitting that at all, really, at this point in time. Yeah.
You're not transmitting at all.
Well, there are many things you can do. We don't. What first thing what you can already do is just to replace it by Gaussian noise.
No.
So you can already use like in a
DC whispering type
synthesis.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or you can replace it by some cosine, one cosine generated in a central frequency of that Gaussian window.
Or one of these glottal pulse things,
and
just use basic LPC-10 style.
Right.
Yeah. Which is probably, I mean, if you were going to aim for like a very low rate code of like 100 bits per second, I guess that's probably fine.
So what is the standard now? Like it's 2 kilobits per second?
The lowest standard is MELP, I think, which is 2400.
Oh,
it's been implemented at 1200 bits per second using more complicated quantization schemes and stuff like that.
1200?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, it's possible.
I saw it, they used matrix quantization on the LP, on the LSF parameters or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, that's quite, it becomes quite computationally
intensive.
But I mean, I imagine the same sort of approach would be.
Well, I'm just comparing it with RPC 10 standard, which is like classical RPC. A bit optimized, so then there is, I think, 2.4 kilobits per second to bit rate for that.
Yeah, that's the same. 20 MELP's a lot better quality, though.
Yeah, definitely.
But this is codex, right?
This is
you have codex.
No, I mean RPC-10 is just RPC.
Oh, it's not codex.
I think.
Just noise or just those impulses.
I think
SELP
or KELP or however you pronounce it.
Yeah.
It's about 4800, I think.
Yeah, it's around one kilobyte.
The standard's 4800.
Yeah.
That's, I think, given GSM and all this, G729.
Or based around that.
On this itself. At least it gives.
It's not terribly interesting, though. Really.
But still, they use code book, no? So that's
which
may be better than like using just random noise.
Well, you've got a bunch of options, haven't you? You can use like a code excited, or you could use a...
Well, more or less what we didn't do is analysis by synthesis, right? So that's what
Sony
SELP is doing, right?
Mm-hmm. No,
so
sure.
Yeah, so this is what we already didn't do, and that might help a lot, of course.
Yeah, but what's more interesting?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
that's the question.
I suspect with something like SELP, you're going to get a lot higher bandwidth, aren't you? I mean, it's a higher bandwidth standard.
It will be.
So
yeah, sure. For example, there, what I also did was a simple peak ticking algorithm. So if you take a look on the spectrum of that carrier signal, which is more or less like the cosine, if you take a look on it, but it is kind of frequency shifted cosine or frequency modulated cosine.
Okay.
Right, so it's the frequency seems to be changing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Of course, the amplitude is not constant all the time. It should be theoretically, but frankly,
okay.
So what you can see for 1 second signal, you, more or less, you really might see some like one impulse there or spectral line. For.
Okay.
But usually there are many others which are quite small, but they are quite important. If you don't transmit them, then the signal is quite robotic or something like that. So if you really transmit just one spectrum. But this is what you can do, and you can understand pretty well. The signal is audible or...
Okay, so...
If
I
you
mean,
really just
but
find one line, one spectrum, the dominant one in the spectrum of the carrier, Hilbert carrier, and you just transmit this parameter.
Because it's a bit tricky, isn't it? It's not like a standard... I'm just thinking, I mean, what sort of option... It's not like you can't just do standard... you know, inverse filtering for
signal
reconstruction or anything like that, can you?
It's even easier because what you have to do is just divide the, you just multiply the Hilbert analog by the Hilbert carrier, that's all.
Oh, okay, and then you just do the inverse of FT or whatever.
Inverse, exactly.
Okay,
you just multiply that one Hilbert carrier, which is transcribed by LSFs, by that this one IFFT signal, so.
But that's going to be susceptible to having phase problems, isn't it? When you
you mean the phase of that carrier?
Yeah.
Output signal.
Of course, I tried to play also with that, and I found that it doesn't matter so much which what is the phase because we are using just 1 second window.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
So of course there might be some disturb when you concatenate those segments together, but. Then the phase might be important.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I mean, I didn't find anything important with the phase. Like, quick, keep the phase zero and it works. Or
And I mean, there is research that's been published showing, you know, speech reconstruction from the essentially the spectrogram without phase information.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's again a little bit different because they are doing this in a frequency domain.
Yes.
But this is in time domain.
Yes, but I mean you can reconstruct the entire
right the spectrogram
from that, can't you?
Yeah.
So you could do it that way. Because
yeah.
I'm just thinking, there's heaps of options. Like if you'd be exactly the same with sinusoidal coding or something like that.
Right.
All you need is the reconstruction of the spectrogram in order to estimate the harmonic amplitude.
Exactly. What we can also do very simply is just to get the magnitude spectrogram using this approximation without the carrier, just Hilbert analog.
Yeah.
But you just get it in this way, in the way of Raoult's, right? But you can also get the short time Fourier transform.
Just by refitting.
Right. Just classical frame by frame algorithm, 20 milliseconds. But you keep just the phases instead of magnitudes. And you can put this together.
Okay.
Right? And it works pretty well, then the signal is not just whispered, and you really hear that there is a voiceness in the signal.
Okay.
But of course, the quality is not so good still, but you can use it for like 2-3 kilobits per second, and it works.
Yeah, but that's the big thing at the moment, isn't it? If the encoding rate's 2 kilobits per second for the excitation component of the signal. It doesn't matter how efficient your encoding of the spectrogram is, you're always going to have a high, relatively high bit rate.
Yeah, sure. Anyway, so maybe it would be nice if you'd tell us what you did with the speech coding, because I didn't see any of PhD thesis of you, I think, so. If you did something, so maybe not interesting at least.
Well, one could argue it's a field that's quite a sort of a niche these days, isn't it?
But
it's more towards industry.
And standards.
Because I worked in the industry for a small time, but there they used to implement all these coders, GSM and IT standards.
So you were When did you do that?
No, just before my PhD.
Okay.
It's for like a few months.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but the like industry is really a big deal. Like, they work on a lot of these standards.
I think so, yeah.
What did you say?
But mostly they're all based on self and like me.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Nokia is being sued in the US for their tri-band usage.
You mean using that CDMA?
No, GSM, because I don't have GSM in the US, or they didn't have GSM in the US.
Yeah, it's not GSM, right? It's
CDMA.
Kind of
okay.
No, CDMA is another level, I think.
No, CDMA is there, but now slowly they're introducing GSM also, no?
Well, that's tri-band.
Yeah, GSM tri-band. Frequencies are different.
Yeah. And apparently Nokia's in a bit of trouble over that one, but...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, now it's really big
I
competition.
Think there is a lot of money in this.
Yeah, should have been a liar.
Like speech recognition, of course, it's very interesting, but people don't use it so much as
well. That's
just coding, just telephoning,
but
right?
I mean, coding is a much more sort of
standard.
It boils down to just mathematics to a large extent, doesn't it?
It's
just a sort of communications.
Right.
Sort of,
so where do you think your thing is useful, in CDMA or GSM?
No,
I think maybe CDMA maybe.
Well,
CDMA
what you were thinking about is CDMA. I mean, there
more
is
time domain. They're doing only.
Well, the problem is this with this application, or it doesn't have to be problem, but one constraint is that we are processing 1 second of the signal. You can go down, of course, but then you are losing a little bit of the bit rate, let's say. Right?
Yeah, sure, sure.
Yeah.
So, but there are many applications where you really can use it because you don't care about algorithmic delay, 1 second algorithmic delay, like for, I don't know, if instead of SMS, you can already have some error channel.
Yeah, sure, sure.
Where
push
you
to talk and stuff like
right.
that. Yeah.
So.
And I mean, as you say, I mean, that delay is, I mean, you can squash that delay to some extent.
Great. Yeah.
I think as far as the delayless coding goes, I don't think you can probably do much more than what's already been achieved, because to get higher compression, you have to, you know, take advantage of redundancy over longer time spans. So.
But even already these long length telephones, they already have delay, at least half a second.
Yeah, sure, but I mean that's transmission delay, not an algorithmic delay. If you add those together, you end up with a
nightmare. But mobile.
We might have someone else joining our meeting soon. I don't know. I mean, you tried sinusoidal coding based approaches, didn't you?
Which one?
Sinusoidal coding.
Well, but the sinusoidal coding is usually, at least what I think or what I know is when you are doing sinusoidal coding, it means you just take the speech signal at the beginning, right? And you are trying to find
harmonics.
Yeah, to find the harmonics in a temporal domain, right?
The thing is, you need part of the parameter set for that are the harmonic amplitudes.
Right.
Now, one way of compressing the harmonic amplitudes is just storing a smooth spectrum, and then you can interpolate.
Yeah,
you can just pick the harmonic amplitudes on that spectrum when you reconstruct.
Right.
On that smooth version of the spectrum.
More or less, I did it. Maybe different way, but
kind
of algorithm like trying to find out the strongest or the most dominant peaks in the spectrum.
But maybe the bit rate is the problem, it's quite high bit rate, but I mean, once again, maybe it's something that's scalable.
But you know, the
yeah, maybe you can just see how many harmonics. He was using 20, I think. Maybe you can try to reduce.
Well, I mean, you can use as many harmonics as you want. I mean, he was just using the fundamental frequency.
Right.
And if you're doing a smooth spectrum representation of the harmonic amplitudes, then you only need to store the fundamental frequency,
right.
And then all these
and the maximum voice frequency, and everything
and
else can be
multiples
. So but then the only tricky thing that we hadn't figured out was the phase information. But you can still get if you do phase unwrapping and all of these other tricks, you end up with some sort of phase representation, which is
some sort of
monotonically decreasing.
If it's unwrapping.
So I mean, it's something that you could conceivably represent in some sort of
some function
low sort of you know, low bitrate representation, I guess.
Right.
Yep.
And then maybe you'd need some sort of correction to correct minor phase discontinuities at some point in time.
I also play with that. And for example, what I found it, well, in this case, we are not trying to encode the speech signal, we are trying to encode some carrier, which is much easier, I would say. You can see it even.
Yeah, okay.
So, where I was trying to encode the phases, so I just found that 2 bits is enough for that, and you really don't hear the difference.
Okay.
So, if you keep all the spectral lines as they were there, but you are just quantizing with 2 bits or 3 bits for amplitude, 2 bits for full phase, so it's okay.
Okay.
The problem is that you have to transmit many of them.
Yeah.
Because there is not just one dominant component, but usually more others which are quite small.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Or what you have to do then, you have to decrease
the
size of not 1 second, but you have to go down, because then you can get just voice part and a noise part. You know, 1 second, it's usually mixed, right, somehow together.
Mm. But you don't do any voice on voice decision.
No, no,
no.
That's even an advantage, I think.
You want to avoid hard choices.
Yeah.
And we don't want to do that. Because
in sine-sodal modeling, it's really another issue. Like,
well, that's one of the big problems with LPC 10, for instance.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
It stinks because it's hard.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then you have to combine all these harmonic model and noise models. So again, you may end up some joinings.
But for example, what we also found is that if you use just the Hilbert envelope, that one which is trying to approximate that instantaneous energy in some low band, like around 200 hertz, and you take a look on the signal, on the trajectory, you can see that it works like kind of a voice detector.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Because for low energies, there is usually noise.
Yeah.
For high energies, there is kind of harmonicity.
Yeah,
so it works pretty well for that. So we might use this one.
But
information
that 200. This is what they use. Like they do use this for pitch marking in speech. So this is what Alan Black's code uses. But it's very speaker dependent on what sort of bandwidth you look at this Hilbert envelope.
Right. Uh-huh.
Depending on the pitch, depending on the person, you'll get a different amount of smoothing at a certain sort of.
Yeah.
So I mean, you know, if it's a female speaker, for instance.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's why you have to tune a lot of parameters, like.
That's a problem. Sure.
But anyway, you don't really need hard decisions, no, like voice to noise. So maybe it may help.
That would be
nice
not to have anything like
that.
Yeah, but from memory, that basic script that they had wasn't very effective. I mean, maybe if you did some sort of initial first guess and then.
Right.
And then chose your smoothing factor based on that.
Because
selecting at any particular point of what the pitch is at the point is maybe inaccurate, but if you estimated it over a second, you should be able to get a decent estimate.
Exactly.
But do you really need it, or like,
well, I don't know. Maybe if we really want to improve the quality, then we will need it. I don't know. So.
But it's not really needed. You don't need to specify at each point. It's voice.
Not now. Well, I'm gonna have a time next month or in 3 weeks, or I'll try to play something there.
Yeah, well, it would be nice to really see what you're actually trying to reconstruct here.
What we are trying to reconstruct.
This carrier signal, what it really.
How does
looks,
it look like?
Yeah. And you did say it looks like a frequency modulated cosine.
Yeah.
Hmm.
It's kind of not frequency, let's say amplitude modulation, where you have just the carrier and that modulation signal. Right?
But you're changing the frequency is also shifting, right?
Have to be, because pitch shifts.
Exactly.
So then it's not exactly amplitude modulation. So it's in between.
It's in between, exactly. So it's not this and that, but still, yeah. But anyway, what also the NRA approach, which is possible to use. The NRA is one to keep the phase like this one, two spectrograms, one the phase, one the magnitude.
Yeah.
And I can again play it. It works on 2 kilobits per second.
That's what Marius did, no? But he was keeping all the phase.
No, what he was doing, he was using force speech recognition.
He didn't do anything. He just transmitted. That's it. He was aiming for
speech coding. Maybe?
He's not really kind of doing speech coding, but he wants to do it on music, so he doesn't really care about the bandwidth, so he wants to have the quality.
I don't know.
Yeah, but even especially the audio series and That's what he was telling, like, yeah, at least even 10 kbit, 20 kbits also is okay.
Right. Yeah.
But he's not touching phase at all. I think he's just transmitting all the phase and then.
Mm-hmm. Well, for
but
example,
he's encoding the envelope.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think so. There are more papers which are using this approach, like trying to encode the magnitude spectrum,
and then leaving the phase.
Leaving the phase, or you just simply can again the phase can be replaced by the noise, which is pretty good. So that's the bandwidth variable approach. So if you really don't have a bandwidth, you just can replace it by noise and it works. Of course, then it doesn't sound as the original because it's more whispered or whatever, but you can understand well. And for example, if you mention this one approach with the trajectory of the phase of Unreal, phase trajectory, I also use because you can do it here. When you get into this domain where you apply or you are trying to compute power spectrum in order, let's say that this kind of trajectory, it doesn't fit this in frequency or time domain, but here you are trying to compute to do linear prediction. So you're just doing FFT, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then applying power in order to get to power domain and then IFFT, right?
Yeah.
So you get the autocorrelation
quotient.
So before you are applying power spectrum, you can again get the you have
yeah,
the complex
the
frequency or complex spectrum, you can get the phase, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the phase look quite similar like this, so you might see it is
more
or less like a line.
Yeah, and it does start to get a little bit non-linear towards the end, but normally that's when the components are not actually probably going to be audible anyway in voice speech, right? So,
right.
Yeah.
But this phase is different from your carrier.
Yeah, it is very different. Yeah.
Because you're
then
just doing on your.
You're doing in different domain.
Yeah.
I think this is frequency
like
domain, this is time domain, and it's quite sensible to any quantization. I found really it looks like the line, so you just say okay, let's put the line there, but it doesn't work. Well, you can understand, but.
Yeah, sure.
You can hear that there are many
because any sort of error in that line is transmitted, is realized in as a phase error,
right?
Yeah.
And the other problem is that it's not bandwidth variable, so you cannot say that this part will be the total noise, which you can really hear in this approach. So that's why I didn't play with that so more because I found there are more disadvantages than the other, which is this approach. So that's why.
But even you can use the phase directly.
You mean
but
this
what?
One?
Yeah, this
yeah,
is
you take just the original phase and.
But this is phase of your spectrum, no? Like it's not.
Right.
Time
yeah, it's not a phase.
Of your signal, it's not.
Yeah.
So then it's very tricky, like how.
No, you can again put that envelope with this phase together. Because
okay, but still, you get only the magnitude of your Hilbert envelope.
You get the
phase slices like.
Yeah, you get the complex spectrum with this.
No, but you started with Hilbert envelope, no? Like magnitude.
No,
of
no.
Envelope.
I started with DCT.
No, before DCT, you were.
After DCT, you are trying. This is a kind of again a real trajectory, right? And you are trying to first find that Hilbert envelope. So as.
So input to the DCT is the speech or like your.
This is a speech.
Just starting.
No, but here what I want to say is really that. It's not part of Hilbert envelope, it's part of the DCT signal.
Cool.
So
yeah, maybe the then
it's enough. If you have just this phase and the Hilbert envelope, you can put it together.
Okay.
You don't need the carrier. I mean this is kind of carrier signal but in different domain represented.
Yeah. It's in frequency domain.
Right. So what I think is that we really need to apply some kind of analysis by synthesis approach in order to
that makes sense because it's a time domain sort of approach. In fact, it's what you're doing is so different to most approaches to speech coding that it doesn't matter that we don't know much about. It's quite different to a lot of the traditional sort of. Source filter type approaches
that's maybe even the advantage here because it's not speech based, which means
it's just a matter of minimum distortion time.
Right. So you can, when I tried and comparing with LPC-10 on a twice bigger or higher bitrate, this would works better, it seems to me, just for unvoiced speech. I'm not mentioning voices because that's unvoiced.
Unvoiced speech is very difficult to sort of judge quality compared to the voice.
Yeah, but when you hear and try to hear some examples with the music, for example.
Yeah, plosives are very important, I guess.
Right, yeah.
So maybe it does a better job of plosives.
Mm-hmm. It's true, yeah. But anyway, it seemed to me pretty good.
Okay. It'd be nice if you had some demos here. Well, I suppose you have to wait till your 10, I guess.
So when is your 10?
It should be 13 December.
I think.
Oh,
bugger.
You want me here?
No. You'll practice it before then, will you?
Okay. I just swapped it with Mike Perro, I think, because he's not going to be here.
Yeah,
this
he's
time.
Going to us.
And
yeah.
I was supposed to have it in January, so fire. Anyway, so. But anyway, I wanted to hear something maybe from you, what you were doing with speech coding, because you mentioned that.
I did, yeah, but we're doing a more traditional frequency slices rather than temporal based stuff.
But it was based on, like, you were using kind of recognizer there, right?
Yeah, well, that was one of the approaches, sure. Yep. And the other approach was this HMM based stuff, which is basically just a parameterization of the, you know, the source filter type parameters,
uh-huh.
and then learning the, you know, training
right.
the speech recognition system, but that's not terribly, that's got no relationship to this.
Yeah, it's different, but speech coding at least.
Yeah, sure, speech coding, I've read some of the other techniques, or standards, but, I mean, I think you're on the right track with that analysis by synthesis, but that doesn't tell you what sort of bit rates you're going to achieve, or
right. Yeah, sure.
And because you have to do it separately for each
band.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I imagine that's the tricky part. Because it would be varying quite rapidly, wouldn't it? Your code book, like you're within each when you go along the 1 second. Sort of segment of the band.
Maybe what we can already do is to decrease this distance. We can do a Hilbert envelope approximation with 1 second, but then we can split that signal into, I don't know, 10 segments with 100 milliseconds or even less, and we can apply some inherent technique for that, you know.
Well, I mean, yeah, first you've got to choose your approach and not worry about the bandwidth.
Right,
and
exactly.
Start thinking about how to give it, because I mean, I guess, especially because this is a more of a commercial based project, you've got to match the quality before you start worrying about other things, right? I mean, what sort of
more or less they don't care what will be the quality or the bitrate. They just want to get something new, really.
Oh, okay.
So if you get the very low bitrate with reasonable quality or very high bitrate, which is again different, but with high quality, they will be happy with the both.
Okay.
So, on one side it's pretty good, but on the other you don't know which way you should go.
Sure.
And
at the moment you're at sort of a point where maybe you have to make that choice a little
right,
bit.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do you want to mention your speech coding experiments?
No.
So you were saying that you were doing something in India with that?
Yeah, but it's mostly like this SELP and this.
So you know the SELP, like.
No, I was doing some like writing some code for testing and this thing, so I'm making some standards.
Yeah.
For it. So,
which
so there are like the thing, these standards, how it works is like they give all the pseudo code kind of thing, and then they put severe test conditions, so you have to pass those test conditions. Like, you can say, okay, we implemented this MP.
Although standards, depending on what standard you're dealing with, sometimes it can be quite ambiguous, right? I mean, the latest MPEG standards are basically this is the container. We don't care how you do it, right? But it's got to fit inside this, this sort of,
format. Even the standards, they give the test signals also. You can't really do it on whatever database you have.
Okay, and then
so
you have to you have to do MOS testing.
Yeah, it's more like they define So I did for some, even a co-cancer, so there also they define what is the overlap speech condition, everything they define, so
okay.
You need to follow all those.
I see.
Yes, this industry is, again, different, like.
Yeah, but it's quite interesting with, even with current speech coding technologies. Yeah, they are still trying to use SELP or those LP.
Yeah, I think they're using only SELP.
There is nothing new, more.
Well,
and if I, when I was listening to the talk of Milan Jelinek, he's the Czech guy, but he lives in Canada. I don't know the name of the university, but they have the button, I think, for Kelp, even. Or
okay.
Kelp is from AT&T, no?
I don't know how it is exactly, but they got
they
very,
LPCs,
very famous for this, for that cell. What they did exactly, I don't know if something different a little bit or not, or they just keep those patents, or
okay.
I don't know how it is exactly. Maybe he never know much more, but
yeah.
When I heard those the presentation, they didn't do so much new. I mean,
no,
it was
no.
last year, and I think he was asking, so what's new that you are so famous with that? And they said, okay, we know exactly how to do that. I mean, you know, not to make any errors, like, in, because everybody knows how to do that, but it's not so easy to implement it, right?
No, no,
so,
no. Yeah.
There is nothing so much new. Really.
Yeah, that's the
well,
main
what's,
thing.
What's
yeah.
new is in the transmission medium, like, you know, new, like, higher bandwidth transmission,
right.
or like, packetized based transmission,
yeah.
and all that sort of
right.
thing, where they're not so much looking at the algorithm, but so
exactly.
much as... How do we incorporate the algorithm within a new transmission sort of medium?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, if you see a lot of papers on like
voice
over IP or whatever,
yeah.
the publications
yeah.
are sort of like,
yeah.
right.
How do we deal with packet loss or how is it affected
right,
by packet
right,
loss?
Exactly.
And
but then they are still using like error signal, which is going to be approximated by code book, right?
Yeah, sure.
And linear prediction, which is used, which is approximating just the spectrum. For months and everything that's all. So
yeah. And again, a lot of this stuff, like where even when I was working, mostly that company was developing for voice over IP, so they have to put all these things on again DSPs, and also it's
right.
mostly
yeah.
like
yeah.
how to how many
like
LPCs are
the code
yeah,
and all
how
sort
many
of stuff.
Yeah, it's still
yeah.
optimization, and then
and even that's less of a big deal now, right? Because all of
yeah.
it all
again, no even
right.
they're also becoming yeah. Even the memories are not really.
Not really. You can throw MATLAB on a mobile phone these days.
Yeah.
Probably not, but.
So even that, yeah, then you can have whatever bandwidth you. It's not really.
Well, I hope that we still have a lot of time for that.
But no, I think, but still, then that's what maybe people are going towards science sort of modeling, right? I was before
I
when the bandwidth conditions were really stringent,
yeah.
then they were
yeah.
using all the LPC based.
For example, when I was, you know, harmonic noise modeling, that H&M system, which is used
yeah,
for synthesis and small.
Yeah.
It's pretty interesting. I mean,
yeah,
it's good.
Yeah,
if you want, you can look at this code and not.
Yeah,
but
all these code implemented. So
yeah.
Right.
It wasn't perfect. There was a little bit of bugs with some of the phase matching, but it was pretty hard to tell that it was not perfect unless you heard. The samples
yeah.
sort of next to one another, so that's not too bad.
But definitely, it's better than coded speech. Definitely.
Oh, sure,
it's
sure.
Really.
And I mean,
but
yeah, yeah.
How much you can get compressed is like
well,
what you're telling is you can do all these tricks. Like, yeah.
The only trick is the phase,
yeah.
and we've got a student starting in January. He's going to start working on how to actually efficiently parameterize the.
In science
yeah.
Modeling.
Yeah.
yeah. And I think we've got a number of ideas for the spectrum. It's easily enough handled
yeah.
just using standard techniques. But
but anyway, do you know exactly how it is done when you really have those MXC encryptions, which means magnitude spectrum, and then you are trying to reconstruct the speech
without phase?
Without the phase.
I've got no idea.
I reviewed the paper. Like, yeah,
I would be confused about it. I don't
no,
know
yeah, maybe
it.
You can look at dates from University of
East.
Which
yeah.
one?
This
University of East Anglia.
University of East Anglia.
It's near sort of. It's near the sort of Cambridge side of England.
I can follow you. They're
yeah,
doing a
yeah,
lot of
yes.
tricks there. Like they're again training Gaussian mixers for
oh.
different frequencies, and then.
Yeah, but there are
but
some algorithms which are quite.
No, much more mathematical.
Yeah,
just basically doing a search. through or some stuff like that, don't they? Or
no, no. Those things are again based on LPC, no? I mean,
it seems to me, yeah, something
yeah.
like that.
It was like the pitch estimation in the X waves or these things.
You know, what
they're
you
all
can do,
dynamic programming based on again LPC
you,
and LPC.
What you can do is take just the minimum phase of which you can get from a linear prediction, right?
Yeah,
you know
yeah.
what I mean, minimum phase signal.
And
it sounds quite reasonable that you can, so, but of course, the, it's not original at all. So I don't know how they do that exactly. No idea.
Yeah, again, like now the problem is different for everybody. Like in this case, what they're doing for distributed speech recognition mainly.
Yeah,
right.
Yes, sure.
Right.
Where you've only got the MSCCs.
Yeah,
MSCCs, but
so.
I think it was it to do with Aurora or something?
Yeah, CTSA or something, European standard.
Okay.
For Aurora, we didn't do anything.
Maybe even it's kind of Aurora framework, so.
Okay.
Yeah, but
yeah.
we didn't do any speech recognition.
No, but now it's a bit forward.
Yeah.
Yeah, now
it was for, say you've got someone who has, you know, they want to dispute that this is what they actually said
right.
by the recognition, and the recognition network was wrong, and you owe me money or whatever. And then they can say, well, we've reconstructed your speech from the speech input to the speech
yeah,
recognizer. Hey, voila, it sounds like you. I mean, obviously, there's a lot more to it than that. There's a lot of sort of, well,
right.
does the quality stand up
right.
to legal sort of requirements
right.
or whatever. But
even at this point, they're planning to use for the standard GSM or this? It's not that?
Oh, no, there's a separate set of standards,
yeah.
I think, for speech recognition.
ETS,
yeah. Which I think requires,
yeah.
you know, the states, the only information they can send is this. So I don't know whether you can actually tack on any extra phase information. You have to deal with what you're given. So.
Yeah. yeah, all these standards are really.
yeah, I don't know. It would be interesting. Maybe that's the best approach to look at to begin with, is just pretend all you have got is...
You mean with this face?
Yeah.
Sure.
Because you can also interpolate the pitch information from the spectrum as well.
Yeah, they do some...
They do that.
...kind of reconstruction of pitch.
Yeah. So, I mean, maybe try to see how good you can go without transmitting any
right.
of that information.
But the quality again from
the pitch was really good. I thought I didn't think you could really.
No,
tell.
The European standards, what they give is they give the MFCCs and they give the pitch.
Yeah.
Then you have to construct the thing.
Yeah.
But if you have MFCCs, then like again you have to get the higher order MFCCs and then.
Yeah, but
the
thing is, if it's MEL scaled, if you have a MEL scale, you get quite fine reconstruction of the spectrum at the lower frequencies, which is what you
yeah,
need
yeah.
for reconstruction of the pitch anyway.
Right. Yeah.
So I mean, if you wanted to transmit with fewer bands, you'd maybe still keep the lower bands, or
yeah.
or maybe you could still transmit the pitch. The pitch isn't that big a deal, but
yeah.
it'd be nice if
yeah.
you didn't, because then I mean that's well, I mean it's worth giving it a go, and then maybe seeing well what information you can add to the data stream to improve
mm-hmm.
performance.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah.
Okay. That'd be cool.
So how about you?
I've never done any coding in my life, so I just have one curiosity. So this is coding, then you code the speech, then you are supposed to transmit the speech, right?
Yeah.
Let's say in GSM or something else.
Yeah.
I remember when I was doing some image processing, there were techniques for compressing and then coding, so adding channel information on the image at the same time in order to save some bits.
You
see
mean like
I mean?
Channel and source coding together?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
I was just wondering if there's someone was doing it with speech as well.
But I can imagine kind of like JPEG operations, which might be almost like source coding, and maybe also channel coding, because you just smooth it.
Well, actually, when you compress, you compress the signal, right? And then you add some complexity
right.
to the signal in order to recover the error.
Right.
So I was wondering if by any chance there was something like this in speech, with the speech.
I don't know.
You don't know?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I don't know so much about channel coding, like those Hoffman coding stuff.
Huffman's
easy
enough, but...
Yeah.
It's
just standard.
It's not the most efficient.
Yeah, sure. That's where I stop. Run length encoding, I'm out of here.
But I think again it's different, no? Like these standards again, all these JSON standards.
Yeah,
maybe they have
exactly.
the compression standards and again
yeah.
sure.
coding standards. But maybe I
and this was the problem actually, because you were
I don't remember anything like they're doing combined.
Not in GSM definitely.
Even normal G17 and normal speech code also, they have the speech
okay.
coding standards again. They have the channel code.
Then they have some
so it's
source. So
yeah.
Okay. Just
I mean, I think they do try to. I mean, obviously the techniques they choose are supposed to be less, you know, susceptible to coding.
Yeah.
Errors,
definitely.
You know, but I mean, that's maybe the limit to that.
Again.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is
it good?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah, if you find some good paper which you
I told you, no, that
there was that waveform prototyping or
no, waveform prototyping is different. I was suggesting like this. But that's again totally did you hear that Bastian Klein's you know waveform like, no, he's really one new guy in speech coding like this. He proposed one prototype waveform.
Okay.
Like they take the signal and then they project into two dimensional and then they take the faces. And it's like prototypes, kind of wavelets you can see like.
Okay.
But it's not exactly wavelets. So they take slow moving waveforms, slow moving signal and like fast moving and then they combine. So it's like, so you project signal into two-dimensional space and then separate the slow-moving parts and fast-moving parts.
Kind of capstone or something like that?
No, this is it. They call it
prototype.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
sounds a bit that way, doesn't it?
So now people mostly use it for like residual length coding. Like, so even suppose if you have the LPC, then you can use this technique for residual
that's quite interesting.
Yeah. So
it'll be good for me.
Yeah, you can really get good qualities with 4 kilo.
So that was the waveform coding which you gave me, the prototype coding paper.
Yeah. But so people can use at waveform level or at residual level. So if you're using LPC, you can use at residual level. You can see residual as some signal. So it's really, so in residual, you can clearly see whether it's fast moving.
Yeah.
In all these points.